My name is Samantha, and I'm calling from Boston, Massachusetts. And the food that I am resolving to eat more of next year is pie. In fact, my New Year's resolution is to focus on one kind of pie each month and try and bake as many of that kind of pie as I can. I really want to get better at making pie from scratch, but I'm also looking forward to just eating more pie.
My name is Amanda, and I'm from Pennsylvania, and next year I resolve to eat more pizza. For the past 2 years, I've been keeping a pizza log. I log when I eat pizza, how many slices I have, what kind of pizza it was, pepperoni, sausage, any kind of that stuff. And I record where I eat it.
Hi, my name is Jennifer. I live in Pittsburgh. And I saw a friend of mine come into our break room at work eating a green pepper like it was an apple. And I want that.
From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. And this is it, you guys. This is the last show of 2016. So I'm going to kick back a little bit. We're going to take it easy. We're going to relax. We're going to reflect. We just heard several Sporkful listeners share their New Year's food resolutions, the foods they resolve to eat more of in the new year. We'll hear more throughout the show, and at the end, I'll share mine. And, you know, we make resolutions about what we're going to eat more of because so many New Year's resolutions are about working out, shedding those extra holiday pounds. And look, I'm all for being healthy, but I just feel like if you're going to pick one thing to resolve to do in the new year, it should be something you really want to do, not something you're guilting yourself into. And anyway, those resolutions about hitting the gym, they don't even work. Our friend Stephen Dubner of Freakonomics fame, he has a new podcast out. It's called Tell Me Something I Don't Know. And he looked into this.
Here's something I bet you didn't know. Anonymized data from Foursquare, the location-based social tech firm, can identify the exact day of the year that you will put down the barbells and pick up a cheeseburger.
We know that people go to gyms and fast food restaurants a lot. Right after New Year's Eve, people return to the gym in droves. This is something that everybody understands. But there is one day when people's bad habits catch up with their New Year's resolutions. And that date is the first Thursday in February, which in 2017 is going to be February 2nd. That's the day that we call Fall Off the Wagon Day. And that's when the downturn in visits to gyms and the upswing in people going to fast food restaurants intersect. And the second Friday in February, that's actually the most popular day for fast food eating. And that's what we're calling the fatty solstice.
Okay, so definitely marking my calendar now, Friday, February 10th. Is the fatty solstice. We should figure out something special to do for that date. Let's think about that. Now, before we get to more of your resolutions, there's another year-end tradition we have here on The Sporkful, and that is that I pick one of my personal favorite episodes from the year to replay for you. But there's very specific criteria for this selection. I'm not going to pick a show that got a lot of attention because you probably heard that one. I'm not going to pick one that aired recently. I want to try to find one that might have slipped through the cracks. One that maybe you missed. One that's kind of on the weird side, because I got to admit, I got a soft spot for those. So I put a lot of thought into it, and here's the one I picked.
Taste the broth. See if you like it. If you could always add more stuff to it. Never put hoisins in there. Most white people, they pour the hoisins right in and kill my broth. So I like to slip it down.
This is Chef Charles Phan. He's probably the most famous Vietnamese-American chef in the country. His restaurant in San Francisco is called The Slanted Door. And I'm sitting in front of this steaming hot bowl of pho that Charles just made for me. Pho is a Vietnamese soup with rice noodles and this thinly, thinly sliced meat and a rich, delicate broth.
I have to say, only broth that tastes like this is broth when I have in Vietnam. This is what I remember. You walk in, you smell beef, you smell butters, like a butcher shop, you know.
And a bowl of pho also comes with all these sides that you can add as you eat. There's Thai basil and bean sprouts, lime, and I love it. I love pho. It has all these different flavors coming together, so many different bites you can compose. But as I told Charles, pho also kind of stresses me out.
One of the things that I think is kind of fun about pho, but also a little intimidating to maybe white folks and people who haven't eaten it that much, is the sort of interactive element of it.
Uh-huh.
Because I think there's sort of the fear that, like, what if I do it wrong?
Well, you're not going to die, first of all.
Yeah, you're not going to die, but you can definitely screw it up. And you just take, is this sriracha?
Yeah.
Take the sriracha, put it right in the broth?
No. A lot of people do that. I hate that.
Tell me how you do it.
The sriracha and all that is really meant for you dip the meat, take the meat, dip the sriracha. But the minute you put that sriracha into the broth, you kind of ruin the broth. It's somebody who already perfected the broth. Why are you messing with it, you know?
This was not reducing my pho anxiety. Then it got worse. Oh, have I been using my chopsticks backwards all this time? This is embarrassing. I totally was using my chopstick backwards.
That's another show.
I went into my interview with Chef Charles Fahn looking for guidance, really. Like I said, I love pho, but I always felt like I just wasn't eating it right. Like there was a flavor combination that I wanted to unlock and I thought it was there somewhere in that bowl, but I just couldn't find the key. I thought Charles could help. Now, a bit more about pho. It's spelled P-H-O, but it's not pronounced pho, it's pronounced pho. The beef is sliced really thin and they drop it in the soup raw and then the hot broth cooks the meat in the bowl and that broth, whoa. I mean, Charles's takes 6 hours to cook and that broth is fatty, but it's light. It's a little salty and a little spicy. It's just so good and Charles knows it.
Right.
I just love the purity of the broth and you should enjoy it and should never dump stuff in it. And I see it all the time. It's driving me bonker. I don't know where that started from. People in this country had this fascination towards sauce. And we sell a steam bun, they ask for sauce, but they don't do it, you know, you don't go to Subway and say, give me some sauce or my sandwich. But somehow they eat a steam bun from a Chinese restaurant. It's like, where's the sauce? Where's the sriracha?
But in this sort of like, I guess I would say dumbed down American adaptation of a lot of Asian food, so much of it is just about taking some meat or vegetables and dumping sauce on top. In the not as good versions of the food, I'm saying, that sort of has become very popular.
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of bad people making a lot of bad food. But I'm just talking about the act of eating.
One of the things that I struggle with when I eat pho is there's so many great flavors and components that are kind of all coming together. You have the jalapenos, you have these different herbs, you have the noodles, you have the meat, you have the broth. I feel compelled to try to get all of these things together into one amazing, mind-altering bite.
This is not a hamburger. You don't have to shove the whole thing into your face. So, so you ought to do one thing at a time. You know, you ought to do, like, I would drink and enjoy the basil with that and take a bite of the noodle separately. And if you're ready for the bean sprout, you know, in fact, you don't want to dump all the stuff at once. What happens is you're cooling the soup down, right? And then I think soup temperature is very important. Once it gets cold, it doesn't, you know, that's why we heat up the bowl. And this is like, no, I'm sticking your chopsticks straight up.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, like you got to put it down. That's like some bad juju omen stuff. But just don't stick it up like you stick a fork in a haystack.
Okay, you can't have the eating end of the chopsticks sitting in the soup.
The food's sticking up. I don't know why, but
you just can't.
Well, they tell you these things as an Asian kid. Like, if you leave a lot of rice in the bowl, you're going to marry an ugly woman because you don't finish your food.
How's your love life?
No, I got a beautiful wife, okay. So I ate all my food. What are you talking about?
But isn't it funny that now, even as an adult, when I would drop my chopsticks into the pho and they're sticking up that way, even now you had like a visceral reaction. You're like, no!
Yeah, my uncle used to hit me across the table like with his chopstick, you know, smack me.
I want to get back to the idea of the perfect bite of pho. I'm not talking about shoving it. It's not about quantity. I'm just saying that when I see this many different ingredients together in one dish, my instinct is that there must be a way to combine them all in some sort of perfect nirvana bite that is going to, like...
Yeah, but that's your... I mean, like, first of all, like, there's no way you're going to get the jalapeno, the basil. They're all different, distinct things. The bean sprouts, so they're meant to eat like individual bite with the broth. So you're saying that you want to have the basil, the Thai chili, the jalapeno, the bean sprout, and the beef, and the noodle all in one bite and swallowing it.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's not what it's for. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that pho is more like...
It's not like a fancy pairing. I mean, they're meant to eat in its kind of own thing, you know? So it's a very individual preference. I mean, you know, you're talking to a guy who like to eat their sandwiches in layers, so I'm a little biased. You know, I don't shove the whole thing in my mouth. I like to eat and enjoy each item's flavor.
Now, typically pho comes with, you get the chopsticks and you get the spoon.
Right.
Is there anything you use the spoon for other than the broth?
If you want to be really elegant in front of a lady, then you put the noodle in your spoon. If you don't care like me, I just slurp it.
Oh, slurping. Well, let's get to slurping. Tell me about your slurping technique.
I slurp if there's no pretty people in front of me. Nobody's watching, I slurp. But if you're a little bit more serious business conversation, then you wouldn't do that. And you take your spoon and slowly bring that up. But I never like to do that because I lose all the heat. So I like to slurp it down with the bowl in my face. But if I'm in a serious meeting, chances are I'm going to sacrifice my noodle soup and let it die and more focus, and hopefully I can close the deal.
That's how you've gotten so far. Sometimes the focus is not on the food, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is interesting is that I asked you about, you know, getting the different components of the dish together into one bite. To me, a soup would be a dish where you have these different components, but they're, in theory, they're, you know, it's greater than the sum of its parts. They all come together into one bite, one dish. But it's clear from talking to you that that's not what this is, right? Separately from that, you're also talking about how Americans are always asking for sauce. And you're like, what the hell? We don't need any sauce. This is delicious as it is. In essence, with pho, it's not a soup. Really what it is a dish in which the broth is like the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need more sauce because the broth is the sauce.
That's the vehicle already.
So yes. That's what it is. That's what people need to understand.
Now, if you're in the pho shop, you would ask for extra fat. Some of the shops...
You can ask for that?
Yeah. So...
Oh, snap.
So because in Vietnam and some of the better shop, if you get there before 8 o'clock, you get there by 7, there's marrow that flows to the top. That's another extra price that you can ask for. You want marrow and fat. So you literally get the bone marrow on top and you wolf that down with a piece of, you know, donut. It's not good for you, but it's really good.
That's Chef Charles Phan. His restaurant in San Francisco is called The Slanted Door. He's also the author of a cookbook called The Slanted Door, Modern Vietnamese Food. And after talking to him, I feel a lot better about my pho game. What I learned is that I was just approaching it all wrong. To put it in Sporkful terms, you know, like I was trying to find one amazing all-encompassing bite that I could perfect and then repeat over and over again. I was looking for bite consistency. But that's not what you're supposed to be looking for when you eat pho. You're supposed to look for bite variety. So now, when I eat pho, I think of it more like a buffet in a bowl. Coming up, we'll dig into one of the topics I just touched on with Charles, slurping. What are the mechanics at play when we slurp soup and noodles? Is there a way to slurp without splattering food everywhere? And is there a way to do it to make your food taste even better? I'll ask a researcher who knows a thing or two about the minutiae of eating.
I have a student studying animal tongues. She's known as Tongue Girl over in our lab. I mean, food is a very mechanical process, and I just wrote a grant today about how much saliva you produce when you eat.
Plus, more of your New Year's food resolutions and mine. Stick around.
Hi Dan, this is Krista from Miami, Florida, and my New Year's food resolution is to eat more kimchi. I started eating it just over a year ago and have been obsessed with it ever since. There are literally hundreds of varieties to choose from. Put it in a hot dog, great. Put it on a burger, fantastic. Eat it with some rice, perfect. Happy New Year, everyone, and thanks a lot.
Hi Dan, my name is Tam. I'm from Philadelphia, but I work in the country of Colombia. For this New Year's, I plan to eat more avocado. I just moved here from Japan, where avocados were crazy expensive. But now that I live on the Caribbean coast, where avocados are giant and about 50 cents a piece, I vow to top everything with a guacamole I have yet to perfect. Happy New Year's, Dan, and thanks for the entertainment as I ride rickety buses across the country.
Hi, Dan. This is Katie from Virginia. I have been in recovery for the past 7 months from a restrictive eating disorder. So in the new year, I would like to eat a little bit of everything. I want to eat hot dogs and ice cream. I want to have a donut. I haven't had a donut in 5 years. But more than that, I want to be able to eat the donut and the hot dogs and the pizza without fear and without guilt. I want to be able to go out with my husband and enjoy them. I want to get a pizza and a beer with him because that's what he loves. I want to go out for ice cream with my girlfriends, and I want to do it with a free spirit. That's what I want to do in the new year.
Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman, and this is our year-end episode. We are sitting down. We are reflecting on the year, and like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, you guys. 2016 was not the greatest, okay? 2016 saw the death of David Bowie, Prince, and Product 19. And if I can just spend one more minute on that last one, I saw one headline that referred to Product 19 as the most beloved cereal you've never heard of. And that hurt. That hurt in my household because my wife and daughters love Product 19. Okay. We're trying to substitute with Total, which is the closest thing, but the flakes are a lot thinner in Total. They turn soggy faster. There's been a real loss in crunch at the Pashman family breakfast table, and we're working through it. All right, you guys, we're working through it. Anyway, let's get to slurping. I've always been fascinated by the science and mechanics of slurping. Does it actually cool down hot liquids? What are the physics at play? Are there ways to do it that make your food actually taste more or less delicious? Fortunately, I found the perfect guy to answer these questions. David Hu is a professor of mechanical engineering at Georgia Tech, and he's kind of a kindred spirit. He's obsessed with the tiniest details of eating, from how our tongues work, to the role of saliva in eating, to, yes, slurping.
Slurping, it's an interesting thing because it brings two things into the mouth, the soup and the air above the soup, which is where a lot of the, you know, a lot of the flavor is.
And are you actually cooling the temperature of the soup when you slurp?
Well, I actually kind of like getting my mouth burned, but that's kind of a masochistic thing.
That'll be for another episode.
I don't think it tastes good unless I come back with an injury.
Full contact soup consumption.
So, I mean, you notice when it's really, really hot, like when it's almost still boiling, you still want to take a little, and you can still drink it. Like if I have a soup that's still boiling in front of me, I can actually take tiny little sips. And what I'll do is just change the ratio of the air to the liquid. The thing is, our lungs are really powerful. We can bring a lot more air than soup. So you can imagine, you know, when you exhale your lungs, you have this whole liter full of air that comes out. You can really use all that air, and basically the heat from the soup will get absorbed into the air, and the soup will go down in temperature, not so that it's cold, but just so that you don't get burnt, which is this threshold at which the cells in your mouth just don't like it anymore. Slurping soup is kind of like beginner-level slurping. Slurping noodles can be highly dangerous, so it really is more for the advanced learner. So
really, I guess the issue is that you're slurping in a noodle, and depending on a variety of factors, that noodle can more or less fishtail. The end of the noodle will wiggle around, and that can spray whatever is on the noodle all over you and everyone you're eating with if you're not careful. Is that
it, you could create a basically mealtime disaster.
That's right. Especially,
I mean, especially you imagine, yeah,
little kids, right? Exactly. I was just going there. Totally. Do your kids slurp their noodles?
They really like slurping noodles. So we're Chinese, so our noodles don't have that much sauce. If they were Italian, I mean, it could be really dangerous.
Why? What's the difference between an Italian-style noodle and a Chinese-style noodle that makes the Italian one more dangerous?
It's not so much the noodle. It's with the sort of the weaponry that covers the noodle. You have
the sauces.
Yeah, because it basically goes ballistic. So things are fine if you do it slowly. But let's say you are in a rush and you do it at high speed. So your lungs, when you sneeze, you can actually generate airflows that are like 25, 50 miles an hour. You can generate like really high speeds. It's a powerful weapon, your lungs. And you're applying all this force onto this tiny little piece of flexible spaghetti. So if you were bringing in sort of a stiff rod, it wouldn't be a big deal. It's the flexibility of the spaghetti that makes it a weapon. So you bring this in, and you imagine your slurp, this noodle is like a foot long, and you're slow. It starts slowly because you want to start carefully, and your mouth is lubricated, so it actually has very little friction. It comes in at pretty high speed, but it also accelerates. It gets faster and faster. And moreover, the sort of remaining part of the noodle that's outside your mouth gets shorter and shorter. And so as a result, that smaller and smaller part gets higher and higher acceleration, and it starts really getting fast. And when you have high speeds applied to really flexible objects, they start generating what we call instabilities, whipping around. So it might be flapping just a little bit as it comes in, but as by the time it gets to halfway its length, it flaps at a higher frequency and a higher amplitude. And the last 3 inches, it's just going all over the place. It's like you might even hit your own face with it.
So how exactly does the thickness of the sauce determine how much splatter you're going to get? Why does thickness matter?
So the thickness, engineers call it the viscosity. And like honey has a really high viscosity. Water has low viscosity. And it tells you how much it clings to stuff. If you're eating really thin sauce, it when you pick a noodle up out of the bowl, it doesn't have that much on it. But if you, I don't know, want to eat something with thick sauce, you could have more sort of debris on the noodle as you're sucking it in. You could have enough, you know, sauce on a noodle that could fill a whole spoon. It's like taking a spoon, holding it back, and just flicking it at the table. And that's the danger of thick sauce.
Is there another, like you talked about how the noodle, as you slurp it in, and it becomes shorter and shorter because less and less of it is outside your mouth, it will increase in speed. You have more velocity, which increases in stability. So is there something I can do with the speed at which I slurp to reduce that sort of fishtailing effect that you get with the very end of the noodle?
The easiest one is you could just eat shorter noodles. Now, when you have a longer noodle, you're just pulling it in and it just gets faster and faster. So if you had basically noodles that were half the length, I mean, this is not that much fun, right? It's only fun when you can actually endanger yourself. But you can imagine.
Do you tell your kids that?
No, they're not young. They're not old enough. If I told them that, it would be havoc. It's only because we're professionals.
Right. No, naturally. No.
You can also imagine having pasta that's long and skinny on one end and then really heavy on the other end. If you basically slurped in the skinny end, it wouldn't flap around because it would basically, you know, while this spaghetti is trying to break the speed limit, it gets heavier and heavier. Your sort of kinetic energy, the energy that you're putting in to whip this thing around, can't compensate for the fact this thing is getting sort of thicker and heavier. So that, I don't think, would also be so dangerous because then while you're accelerating it, it just can't lift off your own plate and go airborne.
I feel that when I slurp, I often end up with air going into my stomach. And then that fills up my stomach with a lot of air over many slurps. And I get a similar phenomenon that I get if I drink soda, which is that you sort of feel full and bloated. And then you may burp and release that air and then suddenly realize that you're more hungry again and that you could have eaten more. You could have had more soup and then you didn't. That's something that I call slurper's remorse. Is there any science to back up this condition that I've identified?
So our lab, we've been studying the digestive system. So the process of peristalsis, probably it will not allow air to go down. It really is pretty good at getting just the food. The epiglottis is also good for only getting air down the lungs and not food. So it's a pretty finely tuned process. I mean, I can imagine if you eat very fast, you could start to get confused. And I think that's what happens when you get this what was the technical term you said?
Slurper's remorse.
I mean, you also notice you can only eat so fast. It's because these muscles have a maximum speed. They can only really contract so quickly.
Okay. So if I feel like I'm getting slurper's remorse, it's not the slurping that's at fault. It's my own just eating too fast. And maybe if I slow down, then the systems will work better.
That's right.
All right. Well, Dr. David Hu, enjoy that next bowl of soup. Don't burn your mouth too badly.
Thanks. It was great being on the show.
So that was one of our most favorite episodes from this past year. Now we're back here in the present and back to your New Year's food resolutions.
Hi, Dan. This is Gretchen from Maui, Hawaii. My New Year's food resolution is to cook with fire as often as possible. We have a wood-fired oven out in the yard. I want to run it at least once a week. I want to roast pork shoulder, bake a turkey, cook breadfruit, and try my hand at brisket. It's going to be a great year.
Hi, this is Raj. My New Year's resolution is to eat more homemade Indian food. I've never really cooked it before. I've always relied on my mom or fast food and takeout. I have a 2-year-old at home who has actually never eaten Indian food. To me, it'd be really important to kind of just keep the tradition and pass that on to my kids by making the effort to make it at home myself.
This is Sylvia Mansfield from Las Vegas, Nevada. In 2017, I resolved to eat more food put on a plate for me and less of the food left on my child's plate, because I deserve it. Except for leftover grilled cheese, there is no way in hell I'm letting a grilled cheese go to waste.
Now it is time for my New Year's food resolution. But first, I want to report back to you on last year's resolution, which was to bake my own bread. And I got to be honest, I'm giving myself a C+, which ain't great. You know, I'm intimidated by baking. I'm intimidated by the precision of it. But I wanted to give it a shot, and I think I made 2 loaves of bread all year. And one, my friend Ben did most of the work. I picked up the Bon Appetit magazine. It had a cover story, How to Bake Your Own Bread. I thought, this is perfect. And I open it up, and it says, Day 1, you got to do this, this, and that. And then Day 2, do all these different things every, like, 3 hours. And I'm like, God, 2 days? I got to spend 2 days making a loaf of bread? I said, all right, I'm going to try this recipe. I'm going to devote 2 days to it. Then I turn the page of the magazine, and it gets to Day 3. And I'm like, Day 3? How much time do I have to bake a loaf of bread? So I threw the magazine in the garbage, and I made a simpler recipe. And it came out well, and I'm glad I did it, but I think I'm going to mostly stick with the bakery. Now, this year. All right, I'm going to make a drum roll on the table. Here we go. My 2017 New Year's food resolution is in 2017, I resolved to eat more homemade whipped cream. And in response to your first question, no, this resolution was not inspired by the nationwide shortage of canned whipped cream, which is real, by the way. There's a nationwide shortage of nitrous oxide, which is the gas that keeps canned whipped cream airy and whipped, because back in August, a nitrous holding tank exploded, and that slowed nitrous production. And so, big Ready Whip shortage this holiday season, but that's not why I picked this. Okay, this is actually the result of a journey that I've been on over the last couple of years. I used to be a huge pie and ice cream guy, but I found in recent years that that can be very heavy. And so I've been segueing more and more to whipped cream. And so for Thanksgiving with all the pies, I made a big bowl of homemade whipped cream. And it's so ridiculously easy to make homemade whipped cream. Just heavy cream, powdered sugar, and vanilla. And then just take an electric beater, whip it for like 5 minutes, and you have whipped cream. And it's great on everything, not just pie and not just ice cream. You can put it on fruit. You can put it on like anything. Or you know what else? You can put it on nothing. That's right. Whipped cream is good on its own. In fact, the absolute best way to enjoy homemade whipped cream is when you get a lot of leftovers, like I did after Thanksgiving. You have a container of it in your fridge the next day. You wait until kind of late at night. You go into the kitchen, open the fridge. You take the container of whipped cream out, and you stand in the middle of your kitchen in your pajamas, and you eat the whipped cream straight out of the container. That, my friends, is living. And in 2017, I resolved to do more of that. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani, Shoshana Gold, and me. Editing help from Dan Charles. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. And special thanks to you for listening to The Sporkful, for engaging with what we do. We couldn't do this without you. So happy New Year. We'll see you in 2017. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Edward Lindsay Hall III from Lynchburg, Virginia.
And I'm Nora from Taylor, Texas.
And this is Jason Rashkow from Stony Brook, New York.
I'm Sarah from Newcastle, UK.
And I'm Cal from Columbia, South Carolina.
And I'm Kathy from Stockton, California.
And I'm Kiana. I'm 11 years old and I live in Chicago, Illinois. And I'm reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better. Definitely more better.